You are locked on Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Today was game one of the first round series for the Golden State Warriors. They won 121-109 over the Portland Trailblazers with a huge 33-21 fourth quarter fueled by Draymond Green and the second unit, as I'm calling it, their domination in the beginning of the fourth quarter. And I wanted to have a guest on to talk about it, someone who is sitting two seats away from me for this game. Adam Wortson of the Fast Break blog for the San Jose Mercury News, one of my favorite people to talk to about this Warriors team. And we went for about 40 minutes on this game, and I included a little bit of audio from Draymond Green. There was something interesting that I thought he said post-game, so I included that in as a part of the story of this contest. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
A lot of different things to get to from this game, but I feel like the place we have to start is the beginning of the fourth quarter. And while Draymond Green justifiably is getting the lion's share of the credit, the defensive effort overall really was a team performance for the five guys on the floor.
Yeah, people talk about defenders being on a string, and this was a perfect example of it. Whatever the Blazers tried to do, the rest of the Warriors were around to adjust, to adapt to the offensive sets. Draymond was spectacular, but Klay was filling lanes. David West was adjusting. Iguodala had his usual fantastic presence on the perimeter. Even Clark came up with some great hustle plays and really held his own on defense. So for the entire team, they have to be thrilled with how that second unit looked to start the fourth.
And it shifted over the course of the period, because early on, I was noting, I put a tweet out, I think, at this point, that early on it was like, well, they're not scoring, but at least they're stopping the Blazers, which was true. You know, they were, so I think they'd allowed 2 points in the first, like, first few minutes, and then the Warriors started scoring, and that's really what made the margin insurmountable. Was Klay Thompson hit a couple shots, I think Iguodala might have had one. Ian Clark made a shot. That's who it was. And then that's really where it started to turn.
Yeah, and it was the defense and the hustle, I think, that helped get them out on offense and get going a bit. Clark, one of his shots was off of a steal that he had. There were some great breaks off of the Draymond blocks and Draymond stops. So when the Warriors' defense holds like that, it just puts the other team back on their heels, and it gives them that much more advantage at the offensive end. That second group is a group that doesn't really have, other than Thompson, a scorer in it. So it's important for them to take advantage of those situations, like off of steals and blocks, where they can get the defense a bit scrambled and really have some open lanes.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Draymond actually talked about that, the idea of that second unit after the game.
When it's, you know, Durant and Curry come out at the start of the second, start of the fourth, and you're in that kind of vet lineup, I mean, do you know that has to be a defensive lineup?
100%, and that was the whole thought behind going with that lineup. You know, for Coach Kerr, he said it to me. He said, you know, the defensive intensity that this lineup can bring, it can change the game for us. And so we went to it earlier in the year when KD was still healthy. It started working for us, and it was on the defensive end. Getting back to it, you know, at this point in the season, we knew the offense was there. We had 88 points at the end of the third quarter. But the problem was they had 88 points. So we knew we had to come out and get stops if we were going to ever pull away in that game. And, you know, start that quarter off, that group did it. And then we were able to knock down some shots, but it started with our defense.
And I think that you can really see how that manifests itself with the way that unit is constructed. They know their identity is defense because that's really what they can do.
Yeah, and I think it's up to West and to Iguodala and Green to keep the ball moving. And they're going to be opportunistic in trying to find looks at the other end. But they bank on the idea that if they get stops, they're going to be able to get enough good looks to either hold the lead or open up the lead. And this was a perfect example tonight where they were able to clamp down so tightly on Portland that even just a little bit of offense helped blow the game open.
I also thought, while he wasn't central for a lot of the fourth quarter success, I thought top to bottom this was one of Ian Clark's best games as a Warrior. And it's strange and sort of funny that so many of his best games this season, I think maybe his three best or three of his four best, all came against Portland.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's the defense or lack thereof from the Portland backcourt or whether he just plays well against them, but he does seem to have a little bit extra when they go up against the Blazers. And this game was a good example, I think, of Clark really playing within himself. He was hustling, he was working on defense, and his shots were either open threes or penetration attempts, which are the types of shots that you want Clark to be taking.
And we could shift from there. Actually, before we shift from there, did you have a favorite or what a standout of Draymond's high profile blocks in this game?
Favorite possession, it was the fast break attempt where it was a 2-on-1 where Draymond was the only one back. I forget who the ball handler was coming up on the wing.
I think it was CJ McCollum.
Yep, I think it was CJ. So Draymond stops CJ, stops the ball movement going forward, and then somehow rotates back to stop the trailer before he can get the ball and then has the block. I think it was Vonleh that he ended up blocking?
That block was on Vonleh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just a spectacular one person blowing up a 2-for-1 break, having the perfect timing, perfect sense of where everybody's going to be, and then having just a spectacularly clean, decisive block right at the rim against a bigger player. It's hard to imagine a single person coming up with a much more spectacular defensive stop than that.
And while Defensive Player of the Year, the ballots are already in, and you know there's a good reason for that. It's a regular season award. It was a great illustration of why he should win it, and that is no slight to Rudy Gobert, who I think had a fabulous year, but the amount of different things that he accomplished, not only on that play, but in this game in general, it's a different set of responsibilities, and the ability that he had to handle that is truly unique. I mean, maybe Kawhi could do it, but I don't think he could do all the rim protection stuff that Draymond does.
Yeah, he doesn't play big the same way that Draymond does, and that's not to slight him as a defensive player. He's spectacular. But Draymond's versatility is second to none. And there was another series, I think it was a few possessions later, where the Blazers were in a half-court set, and they kept on trying to pick to get free up at the three-point line. And Draymond just kept fighting through to stay with the ball handler. And I think they had two or three separate players get the ball and try to penetrate. And Draymond ended up guarding each one of them. And I think it ended up being a stop. So you have a player like that who just doesn't care who he's on. He knows that he can have a defensive advantage. He knows that he has the ability to stick with them. It's an unbelievable advantage for the Warriors in their defensive positioning.
One interesting wrinkle that the Blazers did early was they actually were attacking Draymond in isolations. And I think part of the reason for that, it's sort of the analog idea of putting the ball in the hands of the guy who can't shoot, because you have to pay attention. When you have Draymond on the ball, he can't be a help defender. And especially when Zaza Pachulia is in the game, I mean, the more logical way, and they went a lot to this at various moments to great success, was just involve Pachulia in the pick and roll. But when he was off the floor, they ended up doing that. And it worked kind of well in the first half just because Lillard and McCollum were making amazing shots. Some of them, they were capitalizing on mistakes. But then they also did an incredible job on high degree of difficulty plays, as they can do. That's what makes them special players, what makes them, you know, all-star contenders and everything else like that. But they couldn't continue that level of insane success moving forward, and nobody really can.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point about how to attack Draymond, because that was the only success they had against him. It was in the first half, and it was when in the open court they would target him as they were initiating the offense and have CJ or Dame drive directly at him. And it denies him the ability to be a help defender, and it forces him to make an immediate play on the penetrating guard while he's still moving and trying to get his bearings in defense. There were a couple times where they were able to blow right past him. It was surprising. I think everybody to see Draymond get beaten like that was a bit taken aback. But like you said, it's not something that they can capitalize on later in the game, because the game slows down. The Warriors become better at tightening up on the ball earlier in the half court, and really prevent Draymond from being in situations like that. And as long as he can hang around, play free safety, play the help defender, it's bad news for the Blazers.
And there were a lot of different kind of takeaways from that first half. It was actually a part of the piece that I'm presently working on, will be up by the time most people listen to this for The Athletic, was that the Blazers did two really, really big things right. One, CJ and Dame were absolutely incredible. They combined for 48 points. They were efficient. McCollum in particular was an absolute star out there. Good defense, a lot of the possessions, and he just beat it. And they forced a ton of turnovers. And while a lot, you know, I've talked about with you the idea of forced versus unforced errors, and a lot of the Warriors' turnovers were unforced. They were just stupid mistakes. They capitalized on that to a really high degree. They had a 12-2 advantage in points in transition. So you have all that stuff, and you go, oh, wow, look at how well they're playing. And this is kind of a standard refrain against the Warriors. You go, well, if that many things went right and the score is tied, it's probably not going to work out for them, even though they also tied it again at the end of the third quarter.
Yeah, I think it was either Lillard or CJ after the game who talked about how they played as hard as they could in this game. And I don't doubt that. They did a spectacular job, the backcourt in particular. And despite that, they were still backs up against the wall when it came down to it. It's ultimately, I think, going to be just a test of the depth for the Blazers, particularly when they're down a center, because they don't have a lot of extra firepower that's really able to put the Warriors in a disadvantage. The depth that they have is at a position where the Warriors are very able to guard them and to minimize that advantage. So it's a tricky matchup right now. It probably will get better for the Blazers back when they're full strength later in the series. But to see a spectacular, just tremendous performance from two guards like we saw in this game, and for it to really be nullified by the Warriors playing a fairly average game until the fourth quarter, it shows you the level that the Warriors are playing at right now.
It also ties in with something that we've discussed and that I think is a story for the Warriors basically all the time, which is they learn a lot about an opponent when they play them in a playoff series. And one of the tactical decisions they made, and I don't even think this was an adjustment, I think this is one of the things that they just did at the beginning of that series, was the outright just ignoring of a lot of their other support players. And some of them have had good years, some of them have not. I mean, Aminu has struggled at points in this year, which is so weird because I think so highly of him, especially in their system. But what the Warriors have done, and yeah, Lillard and McCollum had amazing games, but what they've done is they basically said, okay, we will tolerate whatever those guys kind of put out there. And other than a nice stretch at the beginning of the third quarter when Evan Turner hit two big shots and Maurice Harkless hit a shot, that strategy worked.
Yeah, after the game, you had Dame and CJ talking sort of about their responsibility to get their teammates going. And I think it's both an intelligent way for them to think about it, but also crew. The Warriors are essentially seeding the other players the opportunity to get going, and the Blazers haven't found a way to spark them yet. So while CJ and Dame, I think, can have huge games, if they're going to want to try to beat the Warriors, they're going to need to balance their own individual performance with getting high-quality looks for those other guys and get Aminu, get Turner, get Crabbe, somebody going so that they can be a third option and really help spread the court. Because right now, it's just not happening for them offensively.
We've made it more than 10 minutes through this podcast without bringing up either Stephen Curry or Kevin Durant, the Warriors' two leading scorers in this game. And I think that one of the stories for me of this game was the idea that while in bits and pieces, especially Klay's tough shooting, were off of the norm, it generally aligned with the ecosystem that I expected this Warriors team to be in at the end of the regular season before Durant got hurt, which was Draymond fuels the offense, Durant picks his spots, Curry is just kind of an overall force and then has his moments as well, and then Klay just fills in the gaps offensively and defensively. And while it didn't really ever all come together at the same time, that was sort of the arc of this game.
It was nice to watch them sort of taking their turns in asserting themselves. Curry had his runs where he clearly was looking for his shot. His handles looked great. He was getting space on his three-pointers. All of that was fantastic. And then KD, too, in the fourth quarter, was able to really pick his spots, had some good isolation plays, and really found, I think, a rhythm and a way to get his own shot against some pretty tough defense from Blazers at that point. So like you said, it's nice for everybody to sort of be able to fill their own role and not feel like they have to take the full responsibility themselves. I think Klay will get it going. He just had one of those games. And if he does and the other guys can play up to the same level, we're not going to see a game as close as the one today.
I'll get back to Klay in a second. But I think what Durant did in this game is very telling for what his role could be, his more limited view of his offensive role in the future. And it's really three archetypes. So one is transition. He was absolutely awesome in transition for most of this game, especially in the first half. Like, that was basically the best piece of offense the Warriors had, was Kevin Durant in transition. Whether he had the ball in his hands the whole time, whether he got the pass, he was doing a really good job. And then when on mismatches, so like on switches and things like that, especially in the fourth quarter, he was doing a really good job there. And then the final one, which has still been a little bit shakier of a part in this system, and it's going to take some time, especially coming back from an MCL sprain, is as a spot-up shooter. He's one of the better spot-up shooters in the league. His shot is basically unblockable, considering how tall he is. And so he can be more than that. He can be a lot more than that. But those three areas, with the way the Warriors' defense generally plays and the way that teams have to address everything else they do, that's enough to have a productive offensive performance, especially if he can get to the line. And he had 7 free throw attempts in this game. He can have more than that.
Yeah, I think that that would be the ideal if they can get Durant going in those three areas. They probably don't even need that. I think if you have Durant just being a threat to penetrate and a threat to catch and shoot off threes, in the Warriors system, if Klay's hitting any shots, if Draymond has an occasional shot going, they really don't need that much more. The big difference that I saw in this game that Durant provided that wasn't there in previous years was at the beginning and at the end of the game. At the beginning, like you pointed out, he was great in transition. He was able to put a lot of pressure on the Blazers' interior defense or lack thereof and get some key baskets for the Warriors that way. And then at the end, he's just a mismatch. When the game bogs down, when it's half court, when everybody's slogging it out, you can put people on an island against Durant and they're just doomed. He's so good from that mid-range with the ball in his hand and a little bit of time to work. I think he talked post-game about how his ability to work in the post isn't something he's really known for, but it's something that he always keeps in his back pocket. It's a skill that he has when he needs it. And the Warriors are increasingly, I think, looking to him to be in those situations when they need baskets, when things stagnate, and he's delivering so far.
Last year, 2 years ago, maybe even both, he was actually, in terms of points per possession, he was the most effective post-up player in the entire league. And some of that is about how they account for it, because, you know, that's individual stat tracking. I think that was on Synergy, how it's logged. But it's still true or really close to it. And part of the reason he's so efficient compared to a traditional big man is that he doesn't take the shot if he doesn't have the advantage. And that's exactly what you want in those spots, because the players who force it a lot, I think of Drummond for this, Joel Embiid has a nasty habit with this too. Those guys get themselves into trouble because once they get that seal, or Dwight Howard, actually, he's a really good example of this too. Once they think that's the only option, they get in trouble, and Durant can identify it. And he is such a high expectation. It's kind of an offensive pragmatism that he goes, oh, we can do better than this, and just passes out of it.
Yeah, his judgment was very good today, and I think is increasingly fitting with the Warriors system. There's still a few possessions when he's in the open court or when he's a spot-up shooter where I feel like he's a bit still in the Thunder mindset, where he's taking a shot a little bit earlier in the shot clock than Kerr would probably like for his team. He could pass it one more time. They could see if there's something else there. But in the fourth quarter, he was making great decisions, and it really paid off. He was an essential factor of them securing this win.
And you brought up judgment. That's a perfect tie-in to what I was thinking about Klay Thompson's offensive game. Defensively, I thought he did a nice job. He was solid in the first half and then great in the second half for the most part. I mean, CJ and Dame are going to get shots. That's just the way it works. But I thought he did a good job, especially getting a couple steals later in the game, just stripping them. Maybe it didn't produce a steal, but it produced an awkwardness. It broke up the flow. But offensively, there were two different things that Klay does, which are, you know, you could say it's part and parcel to Klay Thompson as a player, and it's worth the trade-off if that's what he's doing. One is, he is supremely confident even when his shot isn't falling, and so there were a few in this game where his feet weren't completely set, he didn't really have a good look, especially when Curry was on the floor, because they can just generate such reliable offense, where he forced it. And, you know, it's kind of like the turnover, the Oracle turnovers, where if you can separate it out from the things he does well, great. If you can't, then you live with it. And then the second one is just his judgment sometimes when he has the ball in his hands. He has gotten so much more comfortable just in terms of the pure mechanics of dribbling, but there are times when he has it in transition where he misses a guy that's open or where he just makes a pass that wasn't there.
Yeah, Klay, more than any other player on the Warriors, I think you can tell early in the first quarter sometimes when he's going to have one of those games. And it seems to still get to him a little bit more than it does, say, Curry or Durant. He missed his first three shots in this game. He was doing that thing where he sort of shrugs his shoulders, rolls his shoulders a little bit. You can tell that he's thinking about it. He's frustrated with his inability to do what he usually does on offense. And he keeps testing it. Like you said, he wants to shoot himself back into it. But I worry that there's a bit sort of a drop in the standards for the shot that he will take when he gets to that point. Whereas somebody like Curry or Durant, I think, is a bit more disciplined still in terms of sticking with their core game or trying to get to the basket to change things up.
Well, and that ties in. one of the big changes that happened with Kerr replacing Mark Jackson was that Clay elevated his standards for what was a good and bad shot. It's just that his standards are still lower than Curry and Durant because those guys are monsters.
Yep. No, I think that that's right. And it's not something that is a concern by any stretch. And Clay is still the person you want shooting the ball in those situations out there. But it's worth looking at as he kind of fades in and out of these games to see how he adapts to it. It's one of the finer, more nuanced points of his game where he could probably still improve a little bit.
The other kind of thing to improve on a star player for me in this game, which was a bugaboo for Clay for so long that I still associate it with him, but Steph Curry has had this problem for years now too, which is not being that great about playing in foul trouble. And Curry, you can make arguments on some of the calls that went against him in terms of whether they were good calls or bad calls, but when you are as central as he is offensively, and you are as not central defensively, it's a really good idea to not get yourself in any of those. And the one that actually stood out to me, partially because it was in the same corner we were in, so in that same corner by 124, he fouled Pat Connaughton on a corner three twice when he had, I think that was three fouls, would have given him his fourth. They ended up not calling either of them. It was a blown missed call by the refs. But that is the sort of play that should never happen with him because you just don't put yourself in that situation. If Pat Connaughton gets a three, so be it.
Yeah, that was the exact situation I was going to point out. He should have had more fouls in this game. I think he probably got lucky, and it really could have changed the dynamic of the game if he was going to the bench in the middle of the third quarter instead of playing it out, which ended up being a very successful quarter with a big Warriors run at the end. They just need to be better not fouling jump shooters. I know it's something that drives Ron Adams mad, and they've had some periods where they've been better at it than others. But the playoffs, those minutes really matter. You need Curry out there for the decisive stretches of the game. So he needs to be more aware of that. And I think you're right that that is one thing that he could still focus on and do a better job with.
Another significant part of this game, even though it was competitive almost the whole way through until the very, very end, was that Steve Kerr played basically his regular season rotation. Nobody played more than 36. Draymond basically played 37. He was 3 seconds short of 37 minutes. And they had a 10-man rotation. They didn't play all bench players together. They didn't do the whole bench mob idea. But JaVale McGee played significant minutes. Draymond actually singled him out. His energy is a key in the third quarter. Sean Livingston was playing mostly with Curry. I thought he was fine. Nothing spectacular. We already talked about Ian Clark and David West did well. And so I think that's kind of a standout part for the Warriors is that this wasn't CJ and Damian Lillard combining for 80 minutes. This was them playing their pretty standard game and not redlining it at all, despite the quality of their opponent and how well Portland was playing.
Yeah, and it was their standard lineup when Kerr could have gotten away with going small, most likely, given the Blazers' current situation with injuries. So it is interesting, and it indicates, I think, that Kerr has settled on something that he likes, and he's going to try to push it as far as he can until there's a need to change. In this game, he was willing to weather the storm, and I think it ultimately proved to be the right choice. I think also the deep lineup that he played during the regular season paid some dividends here. But with Clark and McGee, Kerr got game-changing playoff performances from guys who were at the end of the rotation who he really built up through the season, through using them selectively, building their confidence, having them play the right way. It paid off today. So this was definitely an argument, I think, towards Kerr's lineups rather than against it.
Sure. And I thought that it was interesting. So I kind of had fixated on the number of 40 early in the season with the idea, because I was looking back on prior years in terms of the minutes that the Warriors needed for, and this was more for an average playoff game. I would say they were below that in terms of usage of the star guys in this game. It was 40 minutes for everybody outside the four All-Stars, Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston. And in this game, that 40 was a portion 12.5 Clay, 12.5 Zaza, not about 10 for JaVale, about 13 for David West, and then 12 for Ian Clark. So, you know, about right in terms of numbers. And what you might stand out about that group is three of those four guys played straight center. So what they did is they used them, and then Iguodala is kind of like the chess piece and everything else, and didn't really go that much with Draymond at center. They did use it at a couple important stretches, but they didn't overuse it at all, as you said, despite the tactical advantage.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to be Kerr's strategy going forward, is to have Draymond at center, at least in the first couple rounds as a last resort. When they get deeper in the playoffs, when you're less worried about putting more miles on Draymond, we may see more of it. But right now, I think he's just trying to conserve it and see if he can get away with keeping his normal rotations.
It's completely amazing and a testament to just what the Warriors are at this point that he can actually pull that off. That what is widely acknowledged, and I think if you gave Kerr truth serum and told him that nobody's feelings would be hurt, he would say that their best lineup is, you know, the Hamptons Five, that they can pull off knowing that, playing a certainly capable Portland team, even without Jusuf Nurkić, and just be like, yeah, we don't need it. We're good.
It's the question that hangs over, I think, Kerr's entire coaching philosophy is whether he's so committed to this 10-man lineup that he's going to run it all the way through to the finals, if that's where it ends up. Something like we saw last year, where partially due to injuries, but partially due to Kerr's choices, you had end-of-bench players really getting significant minutes in late finals games, or whether, like you said, he clearly recognizes what his best lineup is. He's just trying to buy minutes, and maybe we'll see something like 2 years ago against the Cavs, where finally everything sort of falls away and the Warriors play their best five players for extended stretches to close out the season and win a championship. I don't know which way it's going to go. I think there's evidence going both ways right now. Kerr is getting good results from the end of the bench guys, so I don't know whether that emboldens him to stick with it longer or whether that's just a happy benefit to the way he structured the season.
I have a pretty clear idea. I think that he's going to use the best stuff in case of emergency, and it's astonishing that they can pull that off and actually do it, but I think that's the approach. You know, even think back to the big adjustments that they made in the 2015 playoffs, and I've been thinking about this, of course, with the project I've been working on, is those were inspired by the Warriors getting behind in series. They were behind against Memphis when they moved Bogut to guarding Tony Allen. They were behind against the Cavs when they put Andre Iguodala into the starting lineup. And you could say, you know, coaches reevaluate their strategies a lot more when they're losing, but it's the same kind of thing with when they go to Draymond at center. It's usually when they need a burst. It's kind of like when they've used JaVale at certain other moments. It's just, they go to those things when they feel like they need a jolt, when they need a boost, when they need something else. And no other team in the league, and there are many other wonderful teams. The Spurs are incredible, and some would make this argument about Kawhi at the four, but I don't think the recognition is there in terms of that being the best thing. And, you know, we'll see, as you said, where it goes moving forward. And it is also different this year, because last year, the Warriors' best defensive lineup probably was not the death lineup. It was probably something involving Bogut. It was an argument. I mean, they like switched everything. They were energized. But this year, there is no ambiguity about what their best defensive lineup is.
Yeah, I think that that's right in terms of really locking in on defense. I think we saw some of that when Durant was out and them kind of returning to that as being a defensive showstopper for them. But I still get the feeling that if Kerr can give Clark those minutes, can give McGee those minutes, I think we're going to see some of McAdoo in the playoffs, that he really trusts those guys and thinks that they're beneficial things that he can get from them, even in really big games. Is it worth putting them in the fourth quarter? I think Kerr is probably still going to go with his best five guys there, but you know, we're still seeing 10-man lineups here in the first round of the playoffs in tight games with a lot of end-of-the-bench players having major roles.
Hey, the last playoff game at Oracle before today was a game where they had players on the end of their bench in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that was partially due to the Bogut injury, partially due to Curry's struggles and the minute problems that that caused throughout the rotations, but Kerr had choices, and he looked down the bench to find those guys.
Well, and Kerr, I think for better or for worse, I happen to use this phrasing partially because he talked before the game about the idea that he's not religious, but he is spiritual, is that he has so much faith, and it's legitimate faith, in his guys. And he believes in them. He believes that James Michael McAdoo can make a difference in those big moments. And that faith is incredibly valuable in the regular season because other guys feel it. And that's what kind of inspires the whole next man up thing beyond just being professional basketball players and being good at your job, is that sort of belief and the mentality that the coach will actually put you in when it matters. However, there can be challenges with that. And we'll have to see. There's no other way of knowing where he goes with that until iron meets iron.
I think that's right. And I think that the experience last year probably made him a bit more of a realist on that. Your point about the faith in his guys is very well taken. And I think that that is a real force and influence for good throughout the Warriors lineup. You look at what it's done for reclamation projects like JaVale. I also think that after what happened in the Cavs series last year, we're going to see a different approach maybe if the Warriors end up in similar situations again, that there's going to be less of a willingness to really push the limits on that, that they may retreat more to what they know well and what they know can be successful.
I am not advocating for this at this point. I am reserving the right to later on, though I don't expect to, considering his flaws. But I caught myself a couple of times, especially in that third quarter, thinking about what would happen if they gave JaVale McGee Zaza's 12 minutes? You know, if he started, played the first 6-7 minutes of the first and third quarters. And it wouldn't work against everybody, but I do think it would work against some teams.
His defense has improved enough throughout the course of the season that I think they could get away with it. The knock at the beginning of the season was maybe he'll do some good things for you offensively, but he's too scattered, he's too inconsistent, and his defensive judgment is really poor. He's doing a lot better both reading the floor in terms of defense and then in man-to-man matchups on defense, making the right decisions. I was really impressed by that today. I still like him as a change of pace. Like you said, he is that jolt that comes in and shakes things up. I think that that benefit dissipates a bit if you have him as a starter. But he's giving him great minutes right now, regardless of the situation, on both ends of the court. If Zaza hits a rough patch or if you find a matchup where you're just not happy with him, I think Kerr would be justified. I'm not saying he's going to do it, but I certainly think he'd be justified based on McGee's performance and looking to give him a shot.
Just for fun, here are the Warriors' defensive ratings with their three non-Draymond centers on the floor. Zaza Pachulia, they allowed 104.5 points per 100 possessions. And again, that's largely that's exclusively starters versus starters, and Portland starters are awesome. JaVale McGee, 102.8. David West, 102.4, despite that massive stretch at the end of at the beginning of the fourth quarter. So I'm not saying that's representative. It most certainly is not. But McGee has gotten better, and I thought it was interesting that Draymond singled his energy and the jolt, I guess is a good way of putting it, as being a part of what actually keyed the fourth quarter, even though he didn't play in the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was what gave them the kind of kick for, okay, you do have another level. You can step up the intensity on defense. He was the guy who came out there and showed them that. And I think that's what Draymond was responding to in the fourth quarter and what the other guys stepped up and matched was the energy that he showed. There was that great series where McGee dove on the floor and pushed the ball out. And I think they were able to finally get it back to a Warriors possession because he's scrambling and running like mad and throwing himself around. And no one had done that up to that point for the Warriors. He was the guy who really said, okay, I'm going to lay it all out there. That's valuable. You need that, particularly in playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of the idea of keeping like the Warriors being this kind of not clean cut because of like the dirty screens and the taunting and periodic nut kicks, but the idea of them being kind of that team that doesn't always grime it up in those sorts of ways in terms of diving for loose balls and everything else. It is a lot of Draymond and then not much else, but those guys can do it. It's just that they need to kind of get activated into it, and the playoffs are exactly the time for them to do so.
Yeah, in the third quarter, there was the opening stretch with Draymond, and then Draymond checked out. McGee comes in, it's a nice way for Kerr to really make sure that he always has an energizer there on the court for the Warriors, somebody who can do that dirty work. If McGee is willing to do that game in, game out, he's going to play himself into a lot bigger role with this team.
Yeah. Anything else you feel like we need to say for the story of this game?
Just to circle back to our original topic, Draymond's performance was really spectacular, and I think hits a deeper nerve for both him and his team. This playoff run, I think, whether it's spoken or not, is really their chance for vindication and a chance for revenge for what happened for last season. Knowing Draymond's personality a bit, I'm willing to bet that he's been consumed by that thought for a lot of the last year since the playoffs. He played with such fire and intensity in the fourth quarter today that it was completely game-changing. I worry about him modulating that intensity a little bit as the playoffs go on. If he is that fired up and that in your face, it will work on teams and it will get him into trouble with some referee crews and some other teams. The Blazers and the Warriors have a lot of together. It's a friendly rivalry. Draymond likes these guys. They like him. They can talk trash and be okay with it. If it's a different club, the Rockets, the Clippers, I could see that going differently. So Draymond needs to be Draymond. He shouldn't have to change his level of intensity because it's such an important part for the team. But it's something to watch going forward. I think that today's Draymond performance could have played out differently in different situations.
Yeah, and I realized I didn't go through his stat line. I'll have some comments on that, which a lot of great points there. But 19 points, 6 of 10 from the field, 12 rebounds, 9 assists, 5 blocks, 3 steals. He was actually an assist short of a triple-double, and 1 assist and 2 steals short of a triple-double 5x5, which is completely insane. I think Hakeem is the only guy who's ever done that. But there are 2 points with Draymond that I want to make. One, if I had written a season preview, a playoff preview, one of the focus points would have been Draymond's flagrant and technical fouls in the first 2 rounds, because that was actually a part of the story of when he got suspended for Game 5, was that it was accumulation. It wasn't just the Steven Adams play. It was he tackled Michael Beasley on a completely useless play in the first round. It was the Warriors had already won the game, and he just basically did that, and he got called for, I think that was a flagrant. He got called for a flagrant foul point. Yep. If he doesn't get that flagrant foul point, then he isn't suspended from Game 5 of the NBA Finals. The Warriors probably win the title. Warriors probably don't have Kevin Durant. Anyway, I don't think that was a light year strategy to tackle Michael Beasley. But he does have to modulate it, but when it's at its good moments, like it was tonight, it's absolutely incredible. And I am not one of the people who says, like, I hear this argument every once in a while of, oh, Draymond is the Warriors' most valuable player. He's their most important player. Most nights he is not. Most nights, just due to the sheer quality of the other guys on the floor, those guys can take the lead. However, Draymond, like Klay Thompson, is fully capable of being the most valuable player and the most positive player for any single game. And even though he wasn't the leading scorer, even though Durant scored 32, even though Stephen Curry scored 29 points, only had 5 turnovers, this was Draymond's game.
And there are going to be situations, I think, throughout the playoffs where they're going to need a Draymond game. This was a good wake-up call for them to start the playoffs. I think he set the tone for them. I think, as you and I both touched on, though, discretion is the better part of valor here. Draymond needs to be thinking long-term. He can't rack up those early meaningless technicals and flagrants. He's probably going to need them for the last the Warriors go all the way. So it's something to watch, but it was electric in Oracle when he was playing that way today. He is a way of inciting both his own team and the crowd that I don't think anyone else really has on the team. So it was spectacular to get to watch it.
It certainly was. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, pleasure as always. Thanks.
Thanks again to Adam Wardson for taking the time to come on. You can read him at the Fast Break blog, and you can follow him at GSW Fast Break. That's GSW FASTBREAK. Really do enjoy talking with him about these games. And I asked him pretty spur of the moment because my timing got all changed up due to the Twitter NBA show, which was so much fun to do. But I was doing this much later when most people had already had the time to kind of cool off from the game. I was still running on it. I'm recording this part around 10 p.m. So very appreciative of him for that. Still not exactly sure what I'm going to do the next couple days because the Warriors don't play again until Wednesday. Long gaps in the early part of this first round. They play Wednesday and then they don't play again until Saturday. So, you know, I have a couple different topics. I think I want to talk a little bit about the rotation, and then I have actually some regular season stuff that I want to get to at some point. So I will try to accomplish all of those at various moments, probably do some sort of a mailbag at some point this week, considering the amount of time. So keep an eye out for that. I think that'll probably be later in the week, maybe post-game too, but I'll figure out exactly when I want to do that. So if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com, at DannyLarue on Twitter. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. I do not promise that I will respond, but I do promise what I promise. And if you want to support the show, leave a rating, leave a review. Those are big things, you know, just to make sure that people do it. And whatever podcast player you're choosing, if it's iTunes podcast player, that's great. If it's not, totally fine as well. And then also, you know, spreading word by word of mouth is incredibly important. Subscribing is very important. And downloading every episode. Sounds basic, but is incredibly important. Really do appreciate it. All the support for that. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. Lots more to do. Probably, you know, we'll have a lot more Locked On Warriors podcasts, of course. And thank you so much to all of you for the support. Really fun to finally get the playoffs going. If you want to, you can also check out my work for The Athletic. I will have both the Every Player material, which is on the app, and my piece will both be up by the time most people wake up and listen to this podcast. Some of you, if you're night owls or living somewhere else, that might not be as true, but it'll be up and really happy with everything else. Excited for the playoff run for there. And then you can also check out Dunked On. Nate Duncan and I are going to talk about this and all the other seven series on the podcast that will come out Sunday night, Monday morning. And then I will also do the Twitter NBA show second screen in some form, probably not for any of these games until they head to Portland, but we're doing that throughout the playoffs. So it's really just watching the game with Nate and me. And it's a lot of fun. We've been enjoying it so far. Did well for the first weekend. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.